Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 3:04 p.m. and today is April 7th and it's 3 p.m. Central Time, and I thought we'd kick off with Bitcoin. It was down an additional $2,000 in here today. I think though that the more important point is that it is pulling back again from the 60,000 level. So this is the third time now in the last 6 weeks that 60,000 has represented an area of resistance. We also have the failed upside break, and the dynamic of the failure was larger than the dynamic of the breakout. So then it pulled back and hit a midpoint danger line stop. And then of course we have the primary inconsistency, which was that every successive range has been completed with a clear and sustained upward dynamic, and that stopped being the case in the middle of March. And since then, $60,000 has been a bit of a hurdle, and now the big question is whether we're going to see a further process of mean reversion, or whether this impressive bull market we've seen over the last 12 months, which was kicked off in anticipation of the halvening, which happens once every approximately every 4 years. Well, whether it isn't now perhaps starting to roll over. The one thing we've certainly seen is a lot more institutional investment on this occasion. And of course, that was a necessary component, because getting the price up from $1 to $100 didn't require institutions, or even from 100 to 1,000. We saw very widespread retail activity from 1,000 to 10,000, but to get it up from 4,000 to 60,000, then getting it all the way up to a $1 trillion market cap, well, that requires a lot more money, and institutional investment was a key component in doing that. And this is also a good way of thinking about where the risk appetite has been. What's also, I think, interesting is that Ethereum also pulled back rather sharply in here today. It is closing below the psychological 2000 level. Downside follow-through tomorrow would confirm the failed upside break here as well. So these are very, I think, impressive assets in terms of their volatility. That attracts leveraged traders. It also attracts people that have got a very high risk tolerance. It probably attracts them more than any other asset class because of the potential gains, and most particularly when you add leverage on top of those potential percentage gains, then you can make a lot of money in a short period of time by trading in cryptocurrencies. But what it also represents is a lightning rod for those kinds of flows. And when people start losing money on leveraged bets, well, then they don't sell what they would like to sell. They sell what they can. And that can have a knock-on effect for other asset classes. So if we do, in fact, see additional downside pressure on Bitcoin, and it pulls further back into the range, and most particularly if it breaks the sequence of higher reaction lows, and subsequently if Ethereum also fails to sustain this break above 2000 and pulls back into the underlying range, well, then it greatly increases the potential that we're going to go back down and test the $1,500 area. So a 25% pullback is considered normal in this type of environment, and that could yet only represent the potential for a complete reversion to the mean, which would be at least a halving from current levels. Then, of course, we can think about what's happening on Wall Street. Well, the S&P 500 is really very inert the last 2 days. But if we see money coming out of the cryptocurrency markets and losses mounting there, then it's likely to be a lead indicator for a reversionary process on Wall Street as well. And at present, the S&P 500 is about 10% overextended relative to the trend mean. So it's certainly not greatly overextended, but the pace of the advance is certainly picking up. And that's particularly been the case over the course of the last 4 months. So we had an orderly consolidation in the region of the peak from early 2020, and then it broke emphatically higher. So There is no questioning that the pace of the advance is picking up. And when we look at that on a log scale chart, it's also quite apparent. And this is obviously being fueled by a great deal of liquidity. We are definitely also now starting to see some questions about which currency or which country is most active in depreciating their own currency. The Bloomberg Dollar Index was a little bit steadier in here today, but it has at least encountered near-term resistance in the region of the trend mean. The pound was among the weaker currencies in here today, and it was down in the order of 89 ticks, but it's been particularly weak against the euro. So we've had two downward dynamics against the euro for the pound over just this week, and it is at least demonstrating some resistance at the upper side of the evolving almost 4-year base formation. So this is obviously a potential risk here that we're going to see at least some pause of consolidation in the pound. The FTSE 100 was quite firm on the back of this weakness in the currency, so it is pushing up now to test the peak from early January. The FTSE 250 has also continued to extend its breakout from this range that's been forming since the beginning of this year. So certainly the stock markets are responding in nominal terms to the weakness of the pound. Although when we look at what is the potential rationale for why the pound is suddenly weaker, well, it's right at the point where we may see some profit taking, because particularly as it's at the upper side of the base versus the euro. But then I think there is also at least some profit taking because of the potential that the Scottish nationalists are going to push deliberately for an independent Scotland. And I think that is a good reason for why somebody might have a little bit more reticence to buy pounds at this particular time, at least until this consideration has passed. Of course, Scotland's primary resource is its oil, and oil prices have rebounded really quite impressively over the course of the last year and continue to hold around the $60 area. I'm posting a speech given by the CEO of Fortescue Metals in comment of the day today. And he makes an impassioned plea, or at least an argument, that somebody has to lead the way in terms of developing hydrogen infrastructure, and he's volunteering that Fortescue will be right at the forefront of that effort. And they are going to pay for it out of cash on the balance sheet, so they're not going to spend. Or they're not going to go to the market to issue debt, which pretty much means that they have the leeway to go off and build that infrastructure. The specific energy of liquefied hydrogen is certainly something that becomes attractive when we start to think about the energy in versus out when in terms of the global economy. Renewable energy generally tends to be much less energy dense than what we're used to in terms of fossil fuels. So the ultimate argument for renewable energy is in its role to contribute to a hydrogen economy. What I find rather interesting is that Fortescue Metals has pulled back from a wide overextension of the trend mean over the course of the last couple of months. And it's done so in a manner very similar to the consolidation that we've had in the hydrogen shares. So Plug Power now is right in the region of its trend mean. So is Ceres Power, so is ITM Power. And at least Ceres Power is bouncing from the region of that trend mean and holding that psychological 1000p level. It's also worth reminding ourselves that these shares went through a very lengthy period where their survival was very much in question. So this is certainly something that is important, that there are big companies like Fortescue are willing to spend the money necessary to develop the infrastructure to create the supply so that consumers have an incentive to go off and at least try to survive or try to develop a hydrogen economy. And that determination is likely to lift the entire hydrogen sector. Of course, it also then raises some questions about the ability of oil prices to persist. And it's the big countervailing argument for why there should be a secular bull market in oil. I am very much more of the opinion that if there's going to be a secular bull market in commodities, it's going to be in copper. And copper prices were weaker in here today. We continue to see that there is some consolidation going on around this $4 area. It's still the consistent trend overall, but we do have a reasonably wide overextension relative to the trend mean, and I think that it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we might see that unwound. Whether that happens as a result of a somewhat swifter pullback, like we saw, for example, with nickel, or by a lengthy process of ranging, which allows the moving average to catch up, well, that is yet to be determined. But it is likely that we will see some evidence of mean reversion before we see copper breaking out to new all-time highs. And I think that is the real definition of a secular bull market, that not only is the price going to break out, but multiply. Of course, we've got a clear example of that in what's happening with lumber prices, where it was up again in here today, and clearly extending its bull market advance. So this is a really quite profound change in the price structure. What's also particularly interesting is that there's only approximately 3,000 contracts trading overall, and the contracts are not especially large. We've got a contract value of about 118,000. So this is a market that is really quite open to manipulation. So the number one thing to pay attention to in terms of this will be when the exchange looks at changing these limits. The limit on lumber used to be $15, and now it is 30. It's, I think, increasingly likely that they're going to open the limits up to approximately 50, if not $60, as this price continues to trend higher. And of course, there is a clear backwardation where the May future is considerably more expensive than the July. Of course, we're seeing upward pressure on commodity prices all over. But I think that it's perhaps more interesting today to pay attention to what's happening in the currency markets. So the Indian rupee was weaker today in a rather dynamic fashion, and it is straight off the back of the RBI beginning to engage in quantitative easing. There are obviously considerations or concerns that this massive infusion of additional liquidity will lead to an inflationary bias, but of course, India is also contending with a coronavirus outbreak that is not yet under control and is still ramping higher. So, there are certainly needs for additional liquidity, and the fact that the Nifty index was unshaken by the fact that the rupee was weaker, it does suggest that investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to asset price inflation. Of course, when we think about the Indian market, it's perhaps better to look at it on a constant currency basis. And even in US dollars, it didn't really move very much at all in here today. So it's quite likely that even with a somewhat weaker currency, and the potential that we're going to see more volatility in the rupee, that stock markets will continue to remain reasonably firm. Then, when we think about what's going on in China, well, The renminbi has been unwinding at least part of its overbought condition, and it was a little weaker in here as well. The Hang Seng has been closed for the last few days because of Qingming, the tomb sweeping festival and Easter falling right on top of each other this year. But the HSI was led lower in here today by shares like Tencent. So there is at least some liquidation of processes, which is the offshoot from Naspers' position in Tencent. They're selling a multi-billion dollar chunk of shares, so that is weighing on it. It's right in the region of the trend mean, and we did have the upper dynamic ahead of the holiday, so it would be ideal if it holds that 600 Hong Kong dollar level, but it may not. The challenge, of course, is that China's administration is weighing in on the sustainable growth of some of these large companies in China. Alibaba was also weaker, and it is barely holding on to the lower side of this range. And we really are in need of clear upper dynamics that are sustained for more than a day or two. Meituan, Dianping is also a share that should potentially benefit from this reticence to allow the big companies to control the entire internet of China. But nonetheless, Meituan was in negative territory in here as well today. So China's markets are, I think, susceptible to additional selling pressure. It's also been one of the areas that benefited most from the pandemic, because China was a magnet for hot money. When there was worries about global growth and worries about the pandemic and the number of cases and the inability of democracies to get their act together and to deal with it effectively, then a lot of that money that would otherwise have gone to Western markets flowed into China. As China embarks upon what is going to have to be a massive vaccination program, the rest of the world is quite likely to overtake China in terms of their resilience to these threats. So that is certainly something that is weighing on the Chinese markets, because Wall Street remains quite firm and risk assets generally have been steady. But I do think that the one thing to pay particular attention to is Bitcoin. We've had a very impressive rally overall. There isn't a great deal of evidence just yet that it's over, but if Bitcoin continues to roll over, it will start to weigh on speculators all over, and it does hold out the prospect for some contagion into the wider market. We've definitely also started to see that the Russell 2000 has been a little weaker, and it is not pushing on to new high ground, and it was in negative territory in here today. At the same time, as we've seen that bond yields have begun to pause, and as bond yields pause, then it's asking some questions about the growth trajectory. At least that is how I think investors are interpreting it. I'm still rather surprised that people are doubting the pace of the economic recovery. I think that the number of people and the number of people looking, or excuse me, number of companies looking for people to work is likely to ramp higher. They may even have to offer higher wages in order to get people to come and take jobs, and there will be a lot of people moving between jobs and looking for better opportunities coming out of the pandemic as well. But one thing that we've clearly seen was that as yields rose, small caps did particularly well. As yields have paused, well, then it's the largest companies were among the best performers on the Nasdaq today. So Facebook, Nvidia, Amazon, Alphabet, Apple, and Intel, Qualcomm were the best performers on the Nasdaq today. So These large companies, they certainly benefit when there is potential downward pressure on yields. And Facebook is pushing out now to a new all-time high and completing this range that's been forming since approximately August. What I find interesting is that it was in August that bond prices peaked. It was also around August that this consolidation that's been underway for the large cap shares also started. So Amazon, for example, peaked very briefly above the 3500 level in early September, and since then really hasn't done anything. If we are looking at a potential short to medium term peak in government bond yields, then that is likely to be beneficial for these companies that generally have prospered in a liquidity-rich environment, and it's also likely to be beneficial for gold. So gold prices were a little bit softer in here today. They're still struggling to rally convincingly from the $1,700 area, but if bond yields do start to come back down, and that is interpreted as some moderation in the outlook for growth, then that is certainly likely to be beneficial for the gold price. I'm not at all convinced that it's really about growth. I think it's much more about liquidity. And the fact that the US government was issuing more debt than the Fed was willing to buy in the first quarter was probably the most important factor behind the push up in yields. Now that we're back in more of an even environment where the Fed and the Fed's purchases pretty much equal out the intention of the US government to issue debt, then that removes a headwind from the bond market. So any new buyers coming in can be new marginal buyers that would push the price higher from here, and that should be beneficial overall to gold prices. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.